the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday, January 21st. I'm Mark Garrison in for Ben Johnson in New York. We continue our Wall Street technology series with a look at high-frequency trading, where powerful computers can make hundreds of thousands of trades in milliseconds, making big money off tiny stock price differences. Dave Lauer is a former high-frequency trader, but he's now a critic. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Sure, happy to be on.
So we will talk about your critique of the business in a moment, but first we just want to understand the technology. So talk about just how far these high-frequency trading firms go to get the fastest computers, the fastest cables that might give them just the tiniest edge against the competition.
You know, high-frequency trading firms have technology refresh cycles, some on a quarterly basis. They're constantly getting the newest servers, testing out experimental hardware, trying to put trading logic directly on video cards. They do everything possible to shave off every microsecond they can.
And at this level, it's not just hardware speed. It can also be about where physically your cables are located. Explain that.
You are mindful of your own cable length. You are mindful of which rack the servers are in and which switch they're connected to. People are using microwaves and lasers to transmit data wirelessly. There have even been plans that talk about putting drones across the Atlantic Ocean to relay microwave signals to save a few milliseconds here or there in order to be faster than the next guy.
So as I mentioned, you have become a critic in some ways of high-frequency trading. In what sense are these high-frequency trading firms having an impact on the savings and the investments of regular folks?
You have a system in which it's very difficult to place large orders without them getting picked apart at many different points along the path to getting executed. And because of that, you have increases in costs to mutual funds and pension plans who have to put through very large orders. And whether that's providing a lot of value, that's really where I personally just didn't see it.
Well, high-frequency trading firms, they disagree with that, naturally. And they defend themselves in a number of ways. Part of it gets into some somewhat complicated questions about liquidity and price discovery. But there is one argument that's quite basic where they essentially say, like, look, yes, high-speed data lines can give an advantage, but so did computers when they came out, or even telephones. What's wrong with markets moving forward and embracing technology?
I am a technologist. I would never argue against the adoption of technology. I think that there comes a point where you have these diminishing returns, but you have continuing increases in complexity and fragility, and the incentives are not there for encouraging the right kinds of investments.
Okay, a lot of questions for Wall Street and also for those who regulate it. Thanks very much, Dave Lauer.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Crowdfunding sites like Kickstarter let anyone donate to a project, but some crowdfunded companies want to go further, offering ownership stakes. But it's not that simple because investing law is just catching up to crowdfunding. Kate Davidson reports on how that's starting to change through a DC real estate company.
Sharon Lewis has lived along the H Street corridor for decades. When she describes how the neighborhood's changed, she chooses her words very carefully.
On H Street, it used to be a lot of hairdressers, but now it's a lot of bars.
It used to be a black neighborhood, but now it's gentrifying. It's booming. But developer Ben Miller says it's been impossible for local people to invest in development right across the street.
Who owns your environment? You don't know. Who's building your environment? Who's building your city? Not you.
So Miller and his group Fundrise started selling shares of private real estate projects to the public online. A slice of ownership, $100 a pop. First, they bought 1351 H Street with private capital, then crowdfunded part of it.
This building has almost 180 owners.
It's going to be an Asian night market. 906 H Street has 360 owners, and at 1300 H Street, there's an old library site that Fundrise wants to buy and turn into apartments.
It could have 10,000 investors.
To solicit small investors now, Fundrise goes through a lengthy review with the Securities and Exchange Commission. But once the Jobs Act is implemented, crowdfunding can take off nationally. The whole point is to make it easier for small businesses to access capital. But there are risks.
Do not invest money in crowdfunding that you can't afford to lose.
Rick Fleming is with NASA, not the space people, but the state securities regulators. He says, remember, most small businesses fail. He says lighter regulation could lead to more fraud, and you can't sell your crowdfunded shares on the stock exchange.
if you invest, say, $10,000 in one of these businesses, you're not going to be able to get that money back anytime soon.
Still, a lot of people investing in Fundrise just think it's fun and interesting. Elon Schnitzer lives on H Street. He expects a 7% return.
My first $7 dividend check, I will take right back to the restaurant that comes in and get a sandwich.
He won't have much say in the property he owns, but at least he'll get lunch. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
IBM reports earnings later today, and it has had a challenging ride as of late. It's trying to reinvent itself in several ways, including a big investment in cloud computing. IBM's also pouring money into Watson, the artificially intelligent system made famous on this game show.
Watson?
What is staggering genius?
That's right.
IBM has big plans for Watson beyond Jeopardy. Yankee Group Vice President Carl Howe explains.
I think the investment in Watson is a play to be at least a very large competitor in the era of big data.
If Watson proves effective at quickly crunching data, it could make IBM serious money. One last thing before we go. Password management company Splash Data is out with its annual survey of the most common passwords. For the first time, a new terrible password is on top. The most common password is 123456, beating out the reigning champion, which is just password. Either one is a fine invitation to get hacked. I'm Mark Garrison, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.